What's up, y'all? Joshua Martin here.
And I'm Edward Crockett. And sadly, we can't come on the phone right now.
But if you would leave us a voice message with your filmmaking question,
we'd be happy to get to it and answer it on a future episode of the pod.
All right. This is our first pod, bro.
This is crazy.
This all basically started from the...
It was the filmmaking overrated, hot takes.
Yeah, hot takes. Yeah, overrated, underrated, yeah. And misunderstood. And so actually, that video got a lot of positive response. Some people wanted us to do this more, and then you came up with the idea of making this pod. So here we are.
Yeah, bro, I'm stoked. I mean, I feel like every time we get on the phone, we just kind of ramble. So
we do.
it just makes sense to make a pod.
Absolutely. So I guess you want to run us through the goal of this for this first episode, and like as a whole too.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, we've both been filmmakers for a while, you longer than I have, and you've been super helpful to answer my questions. And so I think that, like, I guess the heart of the pod would be to answer your questions and kind of be like a hotline for just any sort of filmmaking onset question. I think we're planning is to do an episode every other week.
Yeah, that's the plan. Yeah.
And you can obviously comment and on any of our platforms or anything to ask a question. But if you want to like really ensure that your question gets heard by us, then you can actually call this like number and leave a voicemail.
Yeah. This is a cool mechanic. I really love this idea. Yeah. So filmmaker hotline, y'all. It's a really cool idea. And it's all thought of because of Edward here. So a couple other things too is like, you know, this was about time this video comes out. I might have announced it already or not, but surprise, we're going to do this hopefully bi-weekly. This is going to be the first episode. It's going to be the pilot. We're going to try to, you know, stack a few things beforehand. So this video might be out a little longer. The other videos might take a little bit longer to come out with, but after that, it'll be like just a regular routine. And it's funny because I was thinking about this earlier. Some of the topics we have are really basic, which is fine. And because it kind of... They're basic, and it's going to be going into like what we do as a career and how we're kind of, you know, moving through this space of filmmaking and cinematography and all that stuff. We have various degrees of experience, and, you know, we're still trying to get to that point where we can make something that we're really proud of. I'm sure we've made projects that we're proud of, but like something that's taking our blood, sweat, and tears. I haven't done that just yet. I don't know. You haven't done that just yet either. We have goals for like movies and stuff. So as we're going through this podcast, we're going to be bringing up stuff that we're doing in our careers, but also like things that you guys have questions about. Edward's audience is younger in a way, like they're the newer generation coming in. I'm just the previous generation, I guess. I don't know either, but it'd be cool. It'd be fun. Again, like just going to be some really basic stuff we're going to answer and kind of talk through because we like talking about that stuff, but also like there's going to be some advanced things that are going to challenge us as we go through this 100%. Too, I think. So yeah. Does shallow depth of field make you a worse filmmaker? That's the topic today. And yo, just drop in the comments below your first initial response when you hear that question. That would be really great to see and read later on. But we will probably get a little bit into like the whole YouTube and filmmaking crossover. But this question does stem from the sort of the expectation on YouTube that a lot of young filmmakers or tech filmmakers tend to speak about a lot. It's like shallow depth of field because that makes it more cinematic. You know, that buzzword that buzzword we tend to hear quite often. Yeah, cinematic, shallow depth of field. You know, it's absolutely not the only thing that makes things feel like a movie. But Yeah, we're going to just dive into that. And so I'm going to throw the question at you. It's like, what are your thoughts on full frame and shallow depth of field? Like, what are your thoughts?
I think it's kind of interesting. So I would say in the last couple years, we've seen a lot of, I guess you'd say, like large format movies come out, right?
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I don't know if you watched Don't Look Up. That was super...
I did. Yeah, I did. Yeah,
felt super pretty shallow. There was mm-hmm. There's a couple I haven't seen.
Zack Snyder's film.
yeah.
But that thing razor thin.
yeah. That one is like the reference for full frame.
Yeah.
Whatever. Shallow Depth of Field.
And I mean, I'd have to say I do applaud. I mean, because like at the end of the day, it's like it's really just how you use the tool and the type of features that the tool provides. With the combination of a large format with a very sharp depth of field, it's a look. It's a definite look. Is it effective? That can be argued, right?
Right.
What yeah, necessarily I mean, say?
Right. And so it's like those movies look good, right?
Yeah.
But it's not. I think that when it comes to like the classics, when it comes to, you know, the best in the industry, I'm not saying Zack Snyder isn't one of the best, I guess, but mm-hmm. I'm just saying that. I mean, I always reference Roger Deakins. Like, what's he doing?
Facts.
Roger Deakins isn't shooting shallow depth of field, I'm not going to do it. I mean, right now, we're kind of shallow on the main angle.
You know, trying to get a little pop out, you know.
yeah. But it's like, Roger Deakins isn't shooting at 1.2. You know what I mean? So,
Right. And there's a reason. And I think the conversation gets lost of like, why do you want to shoot open? Is it practical to shoot wide open? And so really, this question is for those who are in the, you know, who's coming into wanting to get into filmmaking, who's learning from YouTube and not going to like the traditional route of going to university or being an understudy or being a PA,
yeah.
or not being on set. You know, you're hearing a lot of the conversation on YouTube that you need to do this to be a cinematic. You need to do that to be cinematic. And it can get very confusing. You get a lot of questions. I get a lot of questions. Every YouTuber who's a filmmaker on YouTube gets a lot of questions. And so I'm hoping that the conversation isn't like, oh, no, you don't need to shoot at 1.2 to be cinematic. Like, that should be the answer for most of it. But my thoughts on full frame.
I will say, you're about to get into full frame.
Yeah.
That is the other question I get a lot. And that people really are focused on is like, and it's okay to be focused on this, like, mm-hmm. but the mm-hmm. size of the sensor. Do you want to do Micro Four Thirds? You want to do Super 35? That's basically APS-C, but, and then full frame.
Yeah.
Where does that land? What are your thoughts on just that medium like full format. Frame shallow depth of field?
I would love to shoot medium format video. But if Fuji would give us the full sensor, or you know, Hasselblad makes something, but they're not going to. Anyway,
crazy. Actually, I know a guy who does he has the Lumix. He has a full frame Lumix, mm-hmm. and then he does the speed.
Oh, he did
booster.
the Kipon.
Yes, he uses the Kipon.
Yes,
and
I was thinking about doing that for a little bit, just to see see what it would do. Because I would do that just to experiment, like large format glass on like a budget-friendly large format camera. Come on, I would totally do that. Wow, I just lost my train of thought. But get into full frame. Yeah, you were saying earlier there are a ton of options, and there are, and it's really awesome to see those options and the flexibility. But to say that full frame is better quality than Super 35, that's a little misleading, because Super 35 has been the standard for, you know, since after 16 mil film and 8 mil film, and then we're Super 35, and that was like the standard for a little bit. So that's kind of a reference when we talk about Super 35, and it's still happening. Like, that's not going away. Television uses it. You know, Ari's still making Super 35 cameras. Blackmagic
just came out with one.
That says a lot.
Yeah.
That says a lot. The leading industry, the leading standard in filmmaking cameras comes out with a Super 35 camera that pushed the bar even more. 17 mm-hmm. stops of dynamic range. Like,
insane.
You know, it's here to stay. Fujifilm doesn't even make full frame cameras. They have medium format that has terrible video. Not terrible, but like not great video. But then they make their flagship Super 35 camera, the X-H2S. There you go. Anyway, I don't like, it's just like those who are in that middle place of hearing one thing and the other and then get swooped up in the emotional side of how the full frame looks when it's wide open. Don't let that be your deciding, you know, factor of getting that camera or deciding to spend that much money on that. You have to think about the practicalities of using full frame versus using another system.
Yeah, I mean, I think a great thing to do is to go, I do this all the time, but go and watch a couple movies and look at like the depth of field. Like,
yeah, how are they using it, right?
Dude, I was looking at a frame from No Country for Old Men the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
They're in like the convenience store. You can almost read the jerky logo behind the character.
They are deep.
Dude, I mean, it was like F8 easily. I was like, this is crazy, but it looks so good. Like it looks, dude, that's a cinematic, I mean. Yeah.
And so, and just kind of getting to that point, that answer too, is like, you know, depth of field is a visual tool. And so it's used for communication, it's used for language. Where are you directing your audience's eye? If you are constantly wide open, using Zack Snyder as an example, he used that tool to really make the scene feel, for me, it felt very disoriented because it was so shallow. Yeah. And it kind of helped because it was a sort of a, you know, a zombie film. And sometimes the things are just so thrown out of focus and it pops out of nowhere. Like that kind of gave that effect. But at times I didn't know where I was going to try to focus. And maybe that was an intention. But like another example is like Jaws, one of my favorite all time films. Just thinking about the beach scenes when he realizes there's a shark in the water, and you know, that whole Dolly zoom shot, that famous shot. But the shot before that, I believe, was a profile shot, and it was just like this deep field of focus of seeing the beach and then the context around that. So he's seeing all these people, and you see his face realizing there's immediate danger. Now, if you would just take that same scene and throw out a focus, I don't think it would have the same effect because you're not looking at the people now. You're kind of seeing this smeary, blurriness, and then 100%. His face. So it's like you have to think about the context of why you're using shallow depth of field and when to use it. It's good for isolation. Yeah, go ahead. I can just keep rambling.
No. So I want to get into that. Like, what do you think are some downfalls of, you know, using shallow depth of field? Obviously, there's benefits and downfalls. You kind of reference a couple of them.
Yeah.
But in your own workflow, like, I'd love to hear that. Like, what's that like?
Yeah, I find myself sometimes using shallow depth of field as a crutch when I don't have amazing composition. And you alluded to this earlier about sometimes if you don't have this set production, if you don't have all these, you know, a proper location, all these things,
right?
You kind of default to that. You know, I used to think it looks better, right? But like, if I were to go back and I stop down a few, what's my composition look like? What does that look like? So I think sometimes if I'm not aware, it becomes a crutch, and then I just have really bad composition, and I think that's not great because our job is to compose as well as, you know, light it too. So like, how do I compose it? Where's the light coming from? All those different factors matter more than like if you can throw a lens out of focus.
I mean, if you just open it wide open, suddenly the lighting in the background isn't as important. Like you're just getting broad strokes almost. Mm-hmm, and so you don't have to be as like picky. But that's not always a good thing. So
right.
Totally understand. There's another thing on my end. I have found if I just automatically go like wide open, I miss focus a lot. Like
when you're manually focusing.
Yeah. I mean, the FX3 is the first camera I've had that has like autofocus. I have mainly been manual focusing my entire, I guess, I don't know, time of being a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And I usually default to shooting wide open, and it's like, bro, it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm like used to seeing like it slowly roll into focus cause I missed it or whatever. Yeah. So I think that's definitely a downfall on my end, but
Yeah. You'll definitely struggle keeping things in focus if you have, let's say like you raise your production value a little bit. So you have a first AC, you have a grip, you have a little bit bigger crew, and you're seeing calls for sort of like a walk and talk, right? Is your walk and talk going to be wide open?
Right.
Like those are things you have to, because now you have to sacrifice. Do you want your actors to be in focus, or do you want, you know, the context of your environment? So, I mean, it's okay to shoot an F4, right? Now, kind of swinging, this is what I tend to do. I swing back to other conversations, but swinging back to full frame, this is where full frame makes a lot of sense, because now, because like full framing compared to Super 35, right? The relation. So, okay, a big factor of shallow depth of field is your relationship between the camera, subject, and background. If you're, and you know this, but I'm just kind of just throwing that out there.
Of course, I'm taking notes over here.
So jotting it down. If your subject, if your subject is closer to the camera, you'll experience you know more of a shallow fall off, depending on your f-stop. But if your camera, subject, and background are almost at equal distance, and you have a full frame camera and a Super 35 camera, you will see the difference between the depth of field between two because of the sensor sizes. Because they're at equal distance. But so if you understand that kind of principle, you can sometimes you don't even realize, like in some movies that was shot on Super 35 because how they treat the subject in relation to the camera versus the background.
Yeah.
Right. So, like at the end of the day too, like you don't know what's being shot on. If it's, you had to look it up on IMDb, it's like, oh, this was shot on Alexa. Oh, this is shot on this.
Right.
There's certain films that you just really don't know until you look up the information. So That tells you one thing too. It's like your eye can't perceive depth of field depending on the camera, but you know, because how they treat the relationship between the subject and the camera and background.
100%. Yeah, that's that's actually. I don't think I obviously know how those mechanics work, but I hadn't like processed through that aspect. Like the background could be like 50 feet away.
50 feet
it's
away,
look
right?
Super shallow.
Yeah,
but it's like not.
Yeah.
It's Super 35, whatever.
The benefit of full frame is the proximity. You can get closer. You can have a one-to-one focal length and get closer, or not even get that close, but one-to-one focal length, but still have the compression or whatever that you need. But with Super 35, you just have to just kind of adjust a little bit, maybe get closer to have that same equivalent and, you know, the whole lens factor and stuff. But, like, it's possible to get a look. You just got to work a little bit harder with Super 35, so...
I will say,
I'm
a little jealous of the cameras you have right now because they are all Super 35, but they're just, I don't know. It's like I shot on a Pocket 4K for a long time. So I love that camera.
Yeah.
And you have the 6K Pro and then the XH2S.
Yep.
It's just amazing. And also Super 35 lenses are significantly cheaper. So like if you're a new filmmaker and you're like, I want to get into filmmaking, I would argue you should not go full frame. Yeah,
you don't need to go full frame. I mean, I really don't think you do. If you are a new filmmaker getting into this space, because as soon as you get that full frame camera, you're going to think, hopefully you don't think this, but you're going to might think, oh, whatever I point this camera at is going to look beautiful.
Right.
That's not always the case.
Right. Like
don't believe that lie.
100%. I can tell you for a fact.
Same.
FX3, it's good. It's not good, perfect.
Yeah. There's more to it than just that image. But what are some of the benefits? I think we danced between both of these, like what are the downfalls and what are the benefits. But I think a benefit for full frame is what I was talking about earlier, is that it gives you, there is better separation in tighter spaces because your proximity to the subject, to the proximity of the camera is closer. And so now you can really throw that background, not out of focus, but you can feel the depth of the room better. Again, this is all subjective. This is also like depending on your production and the story, what it calls for. So like if you're making a film that's in isolation, sure, you could throw everything out of focus because it's going to convey isolation. You feel alone, you feel trapped, but there's other ways too to do that, right? You can put your camera up high and then have the person feel really small and it's like this deep depth of field and it's like empty, like all this other stuff. Like,
yeah, there's tons of different tricks you can do.
Yeah.
So... You mentioned at the beginning a little bit, but shallow depth of field in your life, being a YouTuber, being a filmmaker.
Oh yeah.
How has that, like, I don't know. I've just started doing YouTube, but you've been doing YouTube for a while. So
yeah.
What's that like for you? Has shallow depth of field made you a worse filmmaker? You're a great filmmaker, by the way. I'm not calling you out. I'm not being like, dude, your stuff sucks. It's amazing. I'm just asking.
You know, we both battle with imposter syndrome. So some days I feel 100%. Like, what am I doing? I'm not making anything. Other days I'm like, oh, that was actually pretty good. That little 5-minute video I made. So I'm back and forth, right?
First YouTube video I've made, loved it. Second one, I'm like, do I even post this? I'm like, I don't even know.
Does this see the light of day? I don't know.
Dude, it's tough. Imposter syndrome is real.
It's very real. When you call yourself something, you're not doing the thing that you call yourself. So that's what we live by. But to answer your question, right now I'm very conscious of how I use that mechanic when it comes to filmmaking. And so you're supposed to do that. If you are an aspiring DP, aspiring cinematographer, what have you, filmmaker, you use all the technical things you learn, and then now you use it to your advantage in a creative way. So I try to lead by context. I try to lead by what am I trying to say for the most part. Mm. But if I'm just making a product review and then, you know, whatever, I'm just trying to make it look pretty. Like, that's when I just choose aesthetic and try to create an aesthetic that's pleasing versus it being something that's told, right? What I'm trying to say with it. So that's where I'm kind of, that's where I, you know, come down the middle and say, this is where I can clearly say, this is what I need to do with this type of way of thinking about Shadows of the Field versus when I had to kind of put on my hat. And funny enough, like just bringing that up, I was in Atlanta last year. I was working for, I was making a doc profile and whatever, and we're setting up some of the interviews. It was the first interview of the day, actually. And I dialed everything in, I got the light down, got where I want the subject to be and whatnot. And as I was fitting with the camera, the director comes over and looks at the monitor. And he just says, yeah, this is like a YouTube video.
Oh, no.
Bro, I died inside. I'm like, what? What did you? And I looked. Up. I'm like, I woke up. Yeah, I was like, take the YouTube crust out of my eye. Bro, I was like, oof. Yeah, you're right. I was like, oh, it hurt. The filmmaker in me hurt. I was like, but you're right. It does look like a YouTube video. And basically what he was seeing is that I don't know what I was doing. I guess I was just in that lane of like, I just need to get something up. And it was dead center. The light was flat. And I was trying to, book lighting. And the camera was straight on too. It was like, wow, what am I doing right now? And so, you know, obviously that turned on the switch. And I'm like, oh, this is what I need to do. And I went back in my bag and kind of adjusted everything, you know, 45,
You do the thing.
So that's when I realized, like, I do need to be, I don't know why, that was such a funny situation. That probably only happened to me, but that situation where I just need to be conscious of, like, when to put on my YouTube hat and when to put on my filmmaking hat. And that just means I need to just do more practicing in between so I can have things in my bag already to kind of, you know, put out when I make videos. And it's funny, the last job I just had, it's for social media, so it can feel more like a YouTube video. So it's just, sometimes it is that weird thing when clients want this versus that. It's such a weird thing.
I shoot a ton of like social content. Like the majority of my like retainer clients, actually all my retainer clients are social media content clients. And so it's like automatic. And most of them are like talking head, like looking at the camera, doing something or whatever. So it's pretty easy to fall into that. I had a question that I was going to ask you and it's eluded me. It walked right out my brain. Oh, I guess it wasn't as good as I thought. I was just going to say on that note though, of that project in Atlanta, like I think that it is cool that at least the director said something, right? Like at least he was like, it's kind of off topic, but like, at least he was like, hey, This ain't it. Because that's better than just like being like, oh, okay, and just like going with it. You know what I mean?
And then so, like, next thing you know, he doesn't want to hire me again, right? Like he did hire me again. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, like you're perfectly capable to like switch it up and be like, oh, I'm going to do the thing. I'm going to do the 45. I'm going to do this and that. But sometimes you just get in the zone. You start setting up. I do that all the time. Just like I look at it. I'm like, do I still know how to do this? Like, I'm like, this does not look good. And
it's
then,
so true.
Yeah, you just kind of figure it out, I guess. Yeah, so I mean, I guess at the end of the day, what we're really trying to say is like, don't just automatically shoot wide open with your lens. Don't like just lean on shallow depth of field to like make your video look cinematic. Like there are so many examples of videos and movies that don't have a shallow depth of field and look amazing. And there's a lot of context you gain. There's just, it will improve your filmmaking overall, shooting a deeper depth of field. That's I think where we land.
Yep. Shallow depth of field cannot be a substitute for context.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Bars.
Yep. Bars.
Bars. Well, cool, bro. Well, yeah. Thank you for watching. We're here. We did it. Episode 1.
Did the first one. Episode 1 down.
Let's go.
Let's do it. I'm excited. We're gonna have some interesting stuff. The first one's always the weird one to kind of get the jitters out, and we adjust as we go along, but. Definitely. Yo, guys, also, along with the question that your answers that you wrote down from the question earlier, let us know what some topics are. It doesn't have to be gear related, too. Definitely, I really want to get to like theory stuff. Like,
yeah.
Because that's going to help us in the long run. And, you know, that's where the imposter syndrome is going to come in the most. But theory is also subjective in a lot of cases. So,
right. Give us a call.
Spit our game.
Leave us a voicemail. Yeah. Give us your questions. Yeah.
I like that. All right, John. Yup.